In brightest day,
in blackest night.
Crush your enemies, see them driven before you, to hear the lamentation of your women.
And welcome to Comic Culture, the radio show that champions the local comic book shop. We're broadcasting on 93.3 CFMU FM McMaster Radio, and we're podcasting at comicbookdaily.com. I am Walter Duraglia, Overstreet Price Guide Advisor.
And I am Chris Owen, Professor of Comic History at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
And together we are your Laurel and Hardy.
Looking for laughs in the staid world of comic books.
Yes, Chris. Now, you know, I'm going to dispute that. Comics are anything but staid.
They're chock full of unstaid stuff.
Right, and you know,
instaid.
And I know many comics that are laughable.
Oh, absolutely. I laugh at many of them. A few of them used to start with Robin and end in Liefeld.
Oh.
Oh, right. Oh.
No.
Ouch.
Listen, that guy could sell comics.
Yeah, I know.
That guy could sell comics. Just because yes. You don't like an artist doesn't mean he's not good.
Okay. I was just making a joke, you know. It could have been about anybody. It could have said, you know, started with John and ended in Romita or something. I don't know.
As we look for laughs in the staid world of comics.
I wish we had a few laughs here. Anyways, right. Walter, how are you today?
Chris, I'm doing great. It's Wednesday, our favorite day of the week.
It's
the day that the new comic books hit the local comic book shop. New this week's stand.
Yes, and you know, it seems like it's been a while since we've been together doing this show. It's like old friends meeting again for the first time.
Yeah, and that's what it's all about, Chris.
Yes, old friends.
Together
yes,
for the first time.
Are you saying I'm old?
No.
Oh,
but it has been about 5 weeks or 4 or 5 weeks anyway. You would summertime. Everybody's taking vacations, but listen,
yep,
we're back.
Yep.
We're back in the saddle.
We're back in the saddle again,
and we're gonna go hard. And we're going to start, as we always start every week, with a couple of selections from the new this week.
Yes.
Rack.
Yes,
now,
that's right.
We're lucky to have a sponsor.
Well, of course, yes. In fact, new this week is brought to you by Rawhide Kid Pistol Wax. If you need your pistol wax, try Rawhide Kid.
Wow. Slap leather, baby.
Slap leather, indeed. All right. All right. So,
good, Chris. Good call.
So it looks like for the new this week, it looks like the first one we're going to talk about is Brilliant Number One by Brian Michael Bendis and Mark Bagley.
Yeah, Mark Bagley's at least getting the cover credits there. But, so this is Bendis, of course, who gave birth to Ultimate Spider-Man there. And, you know, he that whole Ultimate Universe really is kind of, I won't say it's Bendis' creation, obviously.
That was sort of his, yeah.
But the Ultimate Spider-Man success is directly related to his great story.
That's right, yeah, that's right. And of course, Mark Bagley, he was the penciler for
right.
Ultimate Spider-Man.
Right.
So the combination team there.
A combination
team. They were really responsible for the success of Ultimate Spider-Man. And,
absolutely.
And now they're going off and they're doing their own creator-owned book called Brilliant. Now, this one is about tells the story of a handful of college-age geniuses who challenge each other to solve the mystery of superpowers. And can the best and brightest change science fiction into science fact? And
is cool.
And if so, how will the world at large react?
Right.
How will it react?
Well,
I'm asking you, how will it react?
It's going to react, hopefully, by buying the damn book. I don't know how it's going to react.
Let's hope, eh?
What's cool about it is Bendis is tying in kind of like a real world type story, which are these, you know, genius geek type,
right,
geek,
right,
but genius type guys, and they're tackling some fantastical thing like superpowers.
Right. Well, and of course, you know, a few years ago, there were a few books that came out like, you know, what if superpowers were real and how does Superman actually fly? And they had people kind of write these things as if like, you know, what would the physics involved be of those kinds of things? And I think this sort of comes on the heels of those kinds of books.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a great premise.
Yeah.
And if anybody can pull it off in terms of entertainment and making it a great book.
Totally.
It's Bendis.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Let's move on to DC Comics today. At your local comic book shop, Justice League of America number 60 is hitting the stands.
Yeah, and this is, you know, by James Robinson and Daniel Sampier. Now, before we even go into what the book's about, I've got a bit of a problem with this.
Well, you got more than one problem, but go ahead.
Oh, all right. Well, anyways, okay, so why in the world would I want to buy this book? Okay. I mean, I suppose if I was collecting it all along and, you know, I was a completist, that's one thing. But really, next month, all these books are ending. Like, there's not going to be a Justice League number 61.
In 2 weeks from today, in 2 weeks, Justice League 1 is shipping.
Yeah.
Right? So, you're right. I mean, this is the last Justice League, number 60. Now, I don't know. Like, DC, what they should have done, I think, is left something hanging where it's going to be picked up. I don't know if that's
going to happen. Or at least you know what they could have done? If I know that they're trying to reboot everything and they're trying to restart things so that maybe they can't have some sort of like, you know, draw, what do you call it, cliffhanger.
Right.
But what they might have been able to do is have like a preview of what's happening in Justice League, you know, so that therefore people might want to buy it and read it and have all these kind of new stories and stuff like that.
I got one better. You know what they should have done with this?
Here we go, yeah.
Remember like Good Times, the sitcom?
Good Times.
J.J. Walker.
Yeah.
That very last episode was like the happy ending episode. Like,
right.
J.J. got accepted to art college.
Right,
and
right.
I don't know, what's her name? The daughter she got a singing contract.
Right.
And mom got a $100,000 a year job. It was like, just happy, happy, happy. The best possible scenario. We're going to end this show
It would have been perfect.
I think Justice League should have been there.
They should have done that. Or...
Batman gets... I don't know. He gets to marry. I was going to say Robin there for a second, and it was a mistake. Sorry. You know, Batgirl or something like that.
But you know what? Why not have some sort of crazy ending where, like, you know, like you say, like they all go off to college or why not like they all go into a bar, like the superhero bar or something like that, and then all of a sudden it just blows up.
Right.
And like that's, you know, that's the end of that one. You know, why not? Why not have some sort of crazy ending?
These people at DC, they don't listen to guys like you and me.
Why don't they contact us?
I don't know.
Anyways.
All right. Okay. Anyway, let's move it on. Justice League number 60. Today, we're going to move to Dark Horse. I like this one. Road of Kings, number 7, Conan.
Oh.
It sustains today.
Wait, hold on. You like a Conan book?
I'm
shocked. Okay, it's shocking.
And it's odd that I would pick it, but... which brought me to, you know, you and I have talked many times about how Dark Horse is doing Conan right.
Yes.
By not committing to an ongoing series, by doing, you know, arcs, big miniseries, using different creators.
Right.
Roy Thomas, of course, the person that brought Conan from the
books,
paperbacks, into comics in 1970 with Marvel. He's writing, which is great. But going back over the years, I don't know, like, you also read Conan. You're also a Conan fan.
Yep, yep.
There's been a lot of teams, a lot of good writers, a lot of artists working on Conan.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering which...
I would say my favorite would probably have to be John Buscema as an artist,
right.
You know, and kind of for me, the writers could kind of come and go, but his artwork really just splashed out on the page to me, and I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, what about yourself?
Well, you know what? I liked... believe it or not, I didn't like Barry Smith.
Right.
Barry Windsor Smith's Conan was too thin. He wasn't muscular enough.
Yeah.
And then it switched to Gil Kane, and he did a better Conan.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you're right. I like Buscema, but I also I like the Joe Jusco covers on the Savage Sword of Conan magazines and stuff like that. Kerry Nord's take was pretty good when Dark Horse picked it up.
Yeah, I agree.
10 years ago or so, but.
I like Kerry Nord's because, you know, even though, I mean, drew a great Conan, but he drew great, like, Frost Giants, and he drew great everything else besides Conan, right? So it was really cool seeing all that stuff.
Now, I didn't do my homework at all, but I believe the Conan movie is opening up
It's opening up this weekend. Yeah,
this weekend. Which is very exciting.
Are you actually going to see it?
I'm going to see it.
Really? You're going to go see a movie in the theater?
Well, yeah. I saw Thor.
And that's true. You did. I forgot. Yeah,
very,
yeah.
Very enjoyable.
That's right, yeah.
And then I'd love to see Conan. It depends, though, me being a guy with young kids.
Yeah.
If it's like PG-14, we'll go.
Right. Well, yeah. I hear you.
All right. Listen, that ends new this week. We got a big show. We got to move it along.
All right.
So please head into your local comic book shop. Check out the new this week. There's lots more to behold.
All right. Well, let's, because we haven't done a show in a little while, so I figured let's go back to some of the classics of, comic culture, music, the canon. The canon of comic culture music.
Do
you like that? So,
what do you got for us?
I thought today, right now, I'd start off with the old Super Friends theme.
Banded together from remote galaxies are 13 of the most sinister villains of all time. The Legion of Doom. Dedicated to a single objective, the conquest of the universe. Only one group dares to challenge this intergalactic threat. The Super Friends. The Justice League of America versus the Legion of Doom. This is the Challenge of the Super Friends.
And we're back. Now, who is that? Is that Ted Knight?
Ted Baxter. His name was Ted Knight or Ted Baxter?
I think one of them is his real name.
And one of us was
his stage name.
Yeah, one of them. Right. Oh, was it Ted Knight? Ted Bailey? I don't know. I don't remember now. But, if you do know...
Pendergrass.
If one of our listeners does know, I think they should let us know through email.
Us know. Yes. Put us out of our misery, please.
Yes, at least mine, right. Anyways.
Chris, great, great segue. You haven't lost a segue inch. You haven't lost a thing.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you.
A great, great segue into industry news. And this week, industry news is brought to you by Arkham Riot Gear and Accessories. Because you want to look your best on the CCTV.
Absolutely.
Right.
So wasn't that a comedy sketch show in the 70s?
That's SCTV.
Oh, right.
Which
right,
was a great
yeah.
Canadian
yes,
program
yes.
with John Candy and Eugene Levy.
I mean,
and
Andrea Martin, Joe Short, Flaherty. Yeah.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's head into industry news.
All right.
First of all, we're going to talk about, looks like Runaways, the Marvel graphic novel about those kids
who run away.
Yeah, they run away because they figure out their parents are supervillains.
Yeah, so basically they're all getting together one night at at their friends' houses, and all of a sudden they stumble upon some things, and they realize that all their parents are actually supervillains.
Right.
So they run away.
Yeah. So Drew Pierce, who was writing Iron Man 3, thinks that they probably start filming this Runaways in 2012 for a 2014 release.
Wow, that's pretty far away.
Yeah, well, it's pretty far away, but I guess 3 years is standard. I guess 2 years now is standard.
Yeah,
2 years.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's a big project. I mean, Brian K. Vaughan wrote it, and it was great.
Right.
I think it'll work. I honestly think that it could be as big, if not bigger, a hit than something like The Avengers.
I don't know if I would say it's as big. It depends on how they target the audience. If they target like a kid movie, or are they going to target like an adult movie, or are they going to target it like a teenager movie, or is it going to be a kid movie that's fun, or for adults too, or an adult movie that kids can watch? Like, it all depends on how they're going to do it.
Selection.
I know.
I'm thinking more like how Harry Potter.
Right, exactly.
And the reason is, I think still. The premise of just normal kids, right, is kind of better than still superheroes.
Superheroes
are still superheroes, and it's like a genre, and that has to kind of it's doing great.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, but other movies have proven that, they can be, you know, twice, three times as big as the superhero. The superhero format seems to be limited to, you know, your 50, 60, $70 million dollar openings.
Yep.
Whereas, you know, you get some other properties that can open up a lot bigger and have long, stronger legs. And stuff.
Right,
so
right.
I think the way Runaways is written in terms of what's happening there with, you know, the kids versus parents and stuff like that, I think it could be very, very successful.
I agree. And you know, I think your comparison to Harry Potter is actually brilliant. I think
Brilliant!
I think it's a movie that could be like that, where, you know, because Harry Potter, again, much like the Runaways, you know, he's supposed to be like this everyday kind of kid who kind of stumbles on becoming a magician,
right.
wizard, I should say. And I think, you know, that
he's
sort
a
of
pretty good magician too.
Hey. Watch me pull this rabbit out of my hat. But you know, that's, I think the idea is the same idea, right? It's you know, everyday kids stumbling into something fantastical.
Yeah. Yeah, so here's hoping that Marvel does it, because Marvel's got a busy slate. They're probably going to want to do an Avengers sequel, and then there's a talk of, like, Doctor Strange, which is one I would love to see.
Yeah.
Doctor Strange.
Me too. I would love to see that too.
I think they're a little late. I think a 1985 Tom Selleck.
Well, didn't they do that? They did a Doctor Strange movie before, and it was the guy that kind of looked like Alex Trebek when he had the mustache. Yeah, yeah.
And that's the kind of Ditko Doctor Strange. Right, that kind of graying hair with that cheesy mustache.
That's right, yeah. That's right. What you need, yeah. Absolutely. All right, well, let's keep on going here.
Moving along. So I'm on the internet trying to write this show, and I'm getting just all kinds of things talking about these mishaps on the Batman Dark Knight Rises set.
Right, right.
There's pictures, there's footage. So the latest one was the Batwing.
Yes, I heard about this.
Yeah, new Bat vehicle. So it's, I guess it's on some sort of rope, and they're filming a sequence in it, and then it goes off course and it flies into some sort of telephone pole.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's excitement and chaos everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And last week, that Anne Hathaway, she was riding, well, she wasn't riding it. The stunt double was riding, like, the Batpod motorcycle.
Yeah.
That hit some sort of IMAX camera. That made some sort of video footage. It's 2 weeks of filming, two mishaps.
Yeah.
Luckily, nobody's been hurt.
Yeah. Now, hold on a second here.
Hold.
What I'm kind of curious about is this just publicity for publicity's sake? Like, you know, are they just trying to drum up, you know, rumors about the movie so people will go see it, and then they'll be like, oh, this must be where the plane crashed, and this must be where Anne Hathaway crashed. You know, let's go see it. Is there something more morbid going on than just, you know, actually accidents happening?
I think you're right, but I think it's just the animal that we live in today, in the sense that if it's being filmed on the street, you get guys like you and me with our iPhones.
Right, right.
With they got the video thing on their iPhones. So everybody's filming it to take home.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Far away from their kids.
And
they're catching every little thing.
Yeah.
And they're running to YouTube. And I bet you there's 1,000 posts of this kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But every now and then something big will happen. And then I won't say go viral, but places will pick it up.
Well,
and they'll run the story. And my point is DC loves it, though.
Oh, yeah.
Because it is publicity.
Yep.
Right. I'm sure if they wanted like a closed set, they would put barricades. And
absolutely,
stuff, sorry, drapes and stuff, so you couldn't see what's happening.
For sure,
so they don't mind people.
No, and unfortunately, maybe my dark mind here thinks that maybe, like, you know, they're not going to have another incident like Heath Ledger with the, you know, the Dark Knight, right? So how can they drum up business like with what happened with Heath Ledger, right? You know, so let's have accidents, let's have things go wrong to get people talking about it.
Listen, and you and I both know a musical play on Broadway that lived off the publicity
of accidents.
Everything going
wrong. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
you know, I mean, I think our show is probably responsible for 10-15% of the gate of
at least, Spider-Man at least, yes, dark, at least,
right?
You know,
because all those mishaps and all those rewrites and all everything that went wrong with that thing was just like a huge publicity.
Well, and here's the thing, you know, people have been talking about Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark because of all these accidents, yet they have the Batman Lives
Batman Lives
in Manchester.
Jolly
and
old England.
There hasn't been a whole lot of publicity about it.
You know, our intrepid reporter on the scene,
Daniel Champion,
Daniel Champion. I think we're going to need a report from him next week.
See if there's any news. Any
I say, Daniel.
Get on the case, will you?
Cheerio.
Pip, pip. All right, let's keep going here. Let's keep going here.
Onwards and upwards.
Oh boy, here we go. It's
we shall never surrender.
He's in some sort of weird trance zone.
Right, so anyway, the Batman filming continues, and we wish everybody good health,
right,
and equipment, non malfunctioning, I guess.
But right, absolutely.
Chris, this is a great story. Moving forward, we have to talk about Wizard World.
Our
favorite convention promoters.
All
last year, this year, we were talking about every new show that they were adding to their itinerary.
Right, because they were scooping up all kinds.
Everything, yeah. Des Moines, all kinds of, maybe not Des Moines, but all kinds of cons were sprouting up, and it had gotten to 16.
Right.
Apparently now they've scaled it back to 8. They've halved their cons. According to their website, it's only showing them, and it's only showing 8 cons on their calendar.
So hold on. So wasn't Wizard World, weren't they really trying to scoop up all the competition and, you know, just like basically swarm everything? And now they're scaling it back? Like, I don't get it.
Yeah. The problem, I think, with the shows at those the smaller cons like Nashville and Cleveland,
right,
and things like that, I don't think there was necessarily any competition there to begin with. What there were local shows.
Right.
And they bought them out, basically, trying to incorporate them into kind of the Wizard Tour.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff, yeah. Right? So it's not like, for example, I think the only places that I can kind of come to mind where they're going head to head and trying to create some sort of niche market for themselves is New York.
Yeah.
Because that big was it Reed?
The Reed Promotions, the
big Reed show.
CB
and Toronto. And
what about Chicago?
Well, Chicago was always theirs. You see, C2E2.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
A competitor coming in.
Right.
To rival them.
Right.
And from I've heard reports. I've talked to guys already that were at the Chicago show that just happened this past weekend.
Yeah.
They said it was massively attended.
Right.
A lot of the dealers did great. Happy customers. There was a lot of books.
Oh,
well,
that's
buy.
Good.
It was a big event.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But Wizard has always put on a fabulous, fabulous Chicago show.
Yes, they have.
You and I have been to that show many times,
yeah.
And that's a fabulous show. My concern was when they were adding all these shows, there are 2 or 3 little gems that they have. Philly was always a great Wizard show.
Right.
Were they going to keep nurturing them and keep investing in them to fight off competition from these other guys?
Yeah,
because obviously, listen, Chicago is fertile ground.
Yeah.
You're going to get big players like Reed coming in trying to steal some business.
I guess.
And New York is fertile ground, so you're getting Wizard coming in
to try to steal business. Yeah.
Some,
yeah.
So there's going to be a battleground in those huge cities.
Totally, yeah.
Whereas I think what Wizard has to concentrate on is the shows that were working for them already, Philly and Chicago for sure.
Yeah.
Is to keep them secured and keep them going well, invest in them.
Yeah.
The ones that they've taken over as well that were very established, that didn't have competitors in the city, and I'll say like Mid-Ohio Con.
Yeah. In
Columbus.
Yeah.
That show went on for decades.
Oh, yeah. Mid-Ohio has been around for forever, yeah.
And so they took that over. So I think they should nurture that because there's like a custom.
Yep.
There's people on their calendars, I'm heading to the Mid-Ohio Con. It's custom.
I'm going to the, if it was like Motor City Con.
Right.
I'm going to Motor City Con.
Motor City Con's coming up. Let's go. It's out of habit, right?
Yeah.
And so I hope that this is the right move because, who cares? I won't say who cares. Obviously, people care. But,
yeah.
Cleveland, Cincinnati, these aren't big, huge metropolitan hotbeds.
No. And you know what? But although I would have liked to have seen, because Canada really only has, a couple big shows, and they're both in Toronto.
Right. Well,
so,
hold on. The Calgary Con.
The Calgary Con, that's true. It's true. The Calgary Con is growing. But I would have liked to have seen the Central Canada Comic Con in Winnipeg grow a little bit more
right. Give that a little bit of a chance. Right.
And surprisingly enough, there's really nothing in British Columbia. There's not a
Vancouver,
whole lot. Yeah,
right.
There's nothing really in Vancouver.
Because you figure the Seattle-Vancouver draw, that's a lot.
Yeah, for sure.
Area. You're right.
So if Wizard World is listening, they should think about doing a show in BC. And, of course, give us cuts.
Yes. Absolutely. Now, the one that interests you and I, I'm sure, the most is they've committed to Toronto again in March. And they have really, really big competition, obviously, from Fan Expo. But I think they see potential in Toronto
for sure
as a place that can have two good shows.
Absolutely, here. Yeah, for sure.
All right, Chris, let's move it on. What do we have? Speaking of the Batman filming, so in Cleveland, speaking of Cleveland, too, on the net, if you type in the Avengers movie, there's some footage, there's some trailers for, I won't say trailers, I guess there's some people. On their
with their like cell phones and stuff places. Like that, yeah.
There's some scenes on the streets of Cleveland on the Avengers movie. Now, this is a massively anticipated movie. People are looking for pretty well going on daily, looking for any kind.
Oh yeah, any kind of tidbits they can get for it. Yeah, for sure. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So that's good. It's good that the filming has started, and everybody is looking forward to that movie.
So, well, do you think this? I mean, I hate to bring this question up almost, but do you think this movie is going to be any good?
I think it will.
Joss Whedon, though, Joss Whedon created Buffy the Vampire Slayer, right? Yep. But he's also done a couple things that didn't fly quite as well. Like, there's Firefly, and then, what was that other one? It's called, Firefly, I got it right here, and Dollhouse.
Yeah.
Dollhouse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, there's a couple things that didn't fly quite as well as Buffy. So I'm just wondering, do you think that he has the chops to do a whole Avengers movie?
You know what? I don't know. I probably would have preferred a director that's kind of had like really big blockbuster size thing, because this is a big blockbuster type of movie.
I think they probably chose him, in my humble opinion, they probably chose him because he's used to working with an ensemble kind of cast, right? Whereas guys like, whereas like the Iron Man movie just really had Robert Downey Jr.
But the problem with an ensemble cast, well, not the problem. He had the luxury of having an ensemble cast that really weren't stars.
Right, exactly.
They were stars through that vehicle that they were doing, which is Buffy, right? Now he's got, Robert Downey Jr. on one side, and what's the guy's name?
Chris Evans, and
the other guy's name?
Samuel L. Jackson.
Samuel L. Jackson. Yeah. All those. He's got a lot of like A-list guys there that he's got to,
totally.
To,
yeah.
I guess,
yep.
Like
yep.
That.
For sure.
You know what? I still think everybody. You know what I think about Avengers? What I think about Avengers is cool, and this is just my thought. On the Avengers is everybody involved, like Samuel L. Jackson, like Robert Downey Jr., like those guys. I honestly think they're kind of excited by the premise of the Avengers movie.
Right. And you make a good point. And I think that maybe just the fact that we get to see the Avengers in a movie like this, and you get the great cast, you get the great characters, they've already got so much going for it. How could it possibly not do well?
Yeah. Right? I think it's going to be a fabulous movie. I think it's going to do huge numbers.
Yeah.
And I'm basically just looking forward to it.
I hope so. I hope it does do well.
All right. Yeah. Chris, let's do one more before we take a musical interlude.
All righty.
And I'm going to talk about the Kirby Ayers file appeal.
Yeah, so remember, like a little while ago, the heirs to the Jack Kirby estate basically lost the judgment saying that they actually own the characters that Jack Kirby created.
Right. Marvel, they wanted some payback from Marvel because Kirby basically co-created Spider-Man, he co-created Fantastic Four, he co-created X-Men. Sorry, not Spider-Man. Spider-Man was Ditko.
Yeah, the Hulk.
Hulk, Fantastic Four, X-Men, yada, yada, so on
yeah.
and so on. Right?
Yeah.
And as you were saying, that judge said that he was basically working for hire,
right?
And the properties belong to Marvel.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and this kind of comes off the heels of Siegel and Shuster winning their battle for the ownership to the original Superman character, right? The way he was originally drawn for that first issue,
right?
Because now he's sort of changed over the years, so they're not saying that they own that one, but they own the original one.
Where's the cutoff then?
Well, yeah, it's a good point because the original one he had like a triangle. Kind of,
yeah, like when he goes to the non-triangle, like where's the or cutoff?
Because
like,
I mean,
you know how Superman had the curl there on the black hair curl on the forehead. Sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't.
Yeah,
like,
I don't know. I don't know what the cutoff is.
It seems like a vague thing to say. Like the way the Superman looked in Action One, belongs to the Schuster people.
Yeah,
but the
maybe it was just Action One. Maybe that's it. Just one comic,
right?
who knows?
Be a pretty good comic to but it's weird that. They would go that way. I mean, it's they either have control or they don't, right?
Yeah.
Jack Kirby can say, the way I drew the thing is different than the way, I don't know,
right, well, right, 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 right,
or whoever drew the thing, and or Mr. Fantastic or whatever, and it seems weird that DC, sorry, that the Schusters won that that didn't make sense to me, but I still think at the end of the day, I think Marvel will kind of settle with the air.
I hope so. It would seem to be the right thing to do, but it seems like it's not the end yet. As according to this article here, it says, so Mark Toberoff, who's the attorney for Jack Kirby, has said, that this is just the beginning.
We've only just begun to fight.
Exactly. Right. All right. Well, good. Having said that, let's get back to a little bit of music here. And this is a little bit of the old Rob Zombie. That was the worst Rob Zombie impersonation I think I've ever heard.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. That's what I'm here for.
Chris, we're going to continue on with industry news, and this portion of industry news is brought to you by Fan Expo Canada.
Ooh, Fan Expo. Yes, it's coming up.
Coming up next weekend. No excuse.
Let's just hold on a second. It's coming up August 25th to the 28th at the Metro Toronto Convention Center. For those of you that actually want to be there, it's actually a 4-day convention this year. It starts on the Thursday on the 25th. And if you need times and more information, I suggest you go to hobbystar.com or even fanexpocanada.com.
Right. And what other incentive do you need other than that you can meet Chris and myself?
Absolutely, yes. Well, who wouldn't want to do that?
Who wouldn't want to
meet us?
That's
right. Okay.
All right. Chris, let's talk about Captain America and how it's doing as a movie overseas. I remember about 6-8 weeks ago, you and I were talking about how the they had changed the name in some market.
Yeah.
Too Americanized, yep. And it'd be like an anti-America backlash, that they weren't expecting Captain America to do well overseas at all. And to our pleasant surprise.
Yeah, it's been doing really great.
It's been doing really great.
Yeah.
Almost 44% of its take is from overseas. There's some other big markets that still hasn't entered into yet. And the movie as a whole is doing great.
Yeah, this is awesome. I'm so happy that it's doing this well because, you know, it's It's got a worldwide total of $265 million now. And I loved the Captain America movie. Of course, he's my favorite character of all time.
Yes, he is.
This is great news for me. And this means that there could possibly be another Captain America movie.
I'm sure
there will be. I'm very excited about this. Not to say that, X-Men First Class was great. I thought it was a great movie. It was very underwhelmingly received, I guess. I don't know what to say.
The thing about X-Men First Class that I found interesting was that the people that saw it, including the critics that I read, thought that it was probably the best superhero movie of the modern
kind
made. Like, rivaled right up there with the first Iron Man.
Yeah.
Some people said it was better. It was just beautifully done, well written,
everything, it was awesome.
Well acted, well produced, well sequenced, everything.
Yeah.
And it hasn't translated into, the massive, obviously it's been successful, but it hasn't translated into the massive success of the three Marvel movies, Thor, Cap, and X-Men First Class.
Yeah.
X-Men First Class is actually going to finish third in terms of the gate, even though all three of them are successful enough for Marvel that they're happy.
Yes, yes.
They're making money. It's just Thor has made the most. And Captain America, I would say, is surprisingly in second place.
Yeah. And I would actually have to say that probably technically speaking, like as far as, the directing and the acting and all that kind of stuff, I thought that X-Men First Class was probably a better movie. I just enjoyed Captain America better. I thought the writing was great. I thought the acting was great. I thought the action was great. I thought there was a little more nuances about Captain America that made it a better film for me. But I still think that X-Men First Class is great.
And I'm biased.
I'm biased. Right. Yeah, for sure.
There's not going to be much chance of me going into Conan and not liking.
Right. But this is I will say it's not going to be Arnold, and I know you're a big Arnold fan. So will you still like it?
I'm sure I will, because Conan is the character's bigger than anybody.
Right. Okay.
Him, so,
fair enough.
Anyway, so good on Captain America. Good on Marvel for producing three hits this summer. The summer is done in terms of the Marvel big blockbusters.
Yep.
Everybody can take a sigh of relief because all three of them did well. And the Cap and the Thor, were important lead-ins to Avengers, and they worked really well.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. No, it was great.
All right. Now, from kudos to Marvel to poo-hoo on Marvel. See how we quickly turn on.
You can never just trust us, can you?
No, you can't.
Yeah.
So Marvel is trumpeting, is touting, is celebrating Fantastic Four number 600.
Right.
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 And now, if you remember half a year ago or so, they canceled Fantastic Four. They went to this Future Foundation.
Yep.
Killed off Johnny Storm.
Yep.
Brought in Spider-Man.
Yep.
Right? Because, let's make the team sell. Hey, I got an idea. Let's bring in Spider-Man.
Yeah, it reeked of, years ago. I mean, a long time ago, like 15, 20 years ago, they decided to make the Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, Wolverine, the Hulk, and Ghost Rider.
Right.
Like, why not just make the Fantastic Four that? Because if that's all you need to do is make it.
Let's do that.
Yeah, let's do that. That sounds great. No, it was terrible.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And we've talked about this before. It's like a great, great band. A great, great band. These guys, they get, oh, look how great I am. They go on to solo careers, and they suck, right?
Right.
Because the sum of the parts is greater than the parts by themselves.
Right, exactly,
and
yes.
Fantastic Four was one of those
things. Yeah, for sure.
Each individual guy in there really didn't carry a title at all. Mr. Fantastic couldn't, Torch couldn't, Thing couldn't.
Well, Thing did have a short run of he will last about 100 to 100 issues
right.
or something?
Right. No. You are right.
That was when he was a wrestler in the cosmos.
Yeah, but together, they've been producing comics for 50 years.
Right, 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 absolutely.
This
yes.
November marks the 50th anniversary of Fantastic Four.
So of course now they're bringing it back.
Now I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to go out on a limb.
Yep,
I'm out on it.
I'm out.
I'm going to say the Fantastic Four as a superhero comic.
Yep.
Fantastic Four number one, November 1961, is probably the second most important comic book ever published.
Say what?
No.
I know, actually. I'm not really all that surprised. I know we've had this discussion before.
Superhero.
I think you should tell our listenership why you think, because so obviously Action Comics number one is the most important.
Right.
Now, why is Fantastic Four number one more important than the so-called Silver Age start of Showcase number four with the Flash?
Right. Well, just very quickly, because we did talk about this before. Action number one introduced the superhero genre.
All right, I love those.
Sure, the superhero genre.
Superhero.
But that genre had waned.
Right.
And that genre had run its course almost.
Right.
DC's bringing the Flash back with Showcase 4 was more of a reaction to the comics code not allowing the horror books and the crime books.
Right, so they needed something else. Yeah.
Right, and they had these derelict characters. It wasn't necessarily revitalizing the industry. It was just filling more space.
Right,
but
when
Fantastic Four number one came a few years later, it really, really revolutionized and totally changed the way the superhero comics were told. It changed everything. It created a totally new fan base, and it's that fan base that we're living off of today. Not
right.
so much the action fan base.
No, no.
It's that FF fan base, and that everything that Marvel Revolution created is kind of grew off of that.
Right,
really
right.
Where we are today.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely
that
right.
That Fantastic Four number one is responsible for a lot.
Very good point.
But, you know, I think it's a slap in the face. Marvel going kind of doing this cheesy, let's live off the number 600.
Yeah, I know. But they do that all the time. And it infuriates me.
Oh.
You know, they even do it with characters like She-Hulk. They'll have, like, you know, a 12-issue run of She-Hulk in the 70s, and they'll have another one in the 80s, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, look at that, She-Hulk's up to number 100. When it wasn't really, it's just the combination of all the different series.
Yes, yes. And they're even talking about bringing Storm back for this issue.
Johnny Storm.
Issue. Storm.
Yeah.
Sorry, not Storm, X-Men.
No.
But Johnny Storm. And I don't like it. But anyway, we can harp on Marvel.
Yeah.
It's cheesy. It's exploitive. It's a quick cash grab. DC now, they've said, they've promised, DC has promised us that they will not revert back to the old numbering when Detective and Action approach number 1,000.
Yeah, I'll believe it when I see it.
Right, right.
I'll believe it when I see it.
They say then that, you know what, nobody will believe our relaunch if we do that. But what they don't realize is, what they know that we don't, I don't know what I'm saying right there, but exactly. But my point is, by the time number 1,000s come along, that'll all be water under the bridge, and they can.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, for sure.
All right, let's
okay, let's keep going here.
Let's keep going.
Yeah. Okay. So now we're going to talk about The Walking Dead.
Right, The Walking Dead, Chris. There's trouble in River City.
Oh no, trouble!
Yeah, we got trouble.
Trouble in River City.
Nothing but trouble.
What's that, boy? What, Lassie?
In a capital. Okay, that was really bad.
Yeah, it really was. Okay, let's keep going here.
I guess the showrunner, the guy that's in charge of the thing, Frank Darabont.
Yep.
He's leaving the show.
Yeah, we don't know if he's leaving or got canned or what.
Yeah, and that's the speculation here on the net is they think he got canned or they think he left because the AMC is putting the squeeze on the budget. They are not, surprisingly, they are not making enough money off of
Walking Dead.
Walking Dead.
That's crazy.
Yeah, but I don't think they've given it enough time. I think Walking Dead is a property with a syndication.
Yep.
Later on, as like... it expands worldwide, and I think Walking Dead is going to be a cash cow.
I agree, but based on what we read earlier today about the costs of making this show, it's astronomical. I had no idea. So according to AMC, THR and AMC, I don't know what those are.
Yeah, the Hollywood Reporter.
The Hollywood Reporter. Sorry. Okay, right, okay. Hollywood Reporter. The AMC cut the budget for an individual episode of The Walking Dead from $3.4 million in season one to $2.75 million in season two. So each episode cost $3.5 million.
That's, to me.
That's insane.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's absolutely insane.
So you put 20 of them together, that's $70 million.
Yeah, no wonder that their seasons are only like, I mean, I think there was six episodes in the first season.
Yeah, you remember in the old TV shows, there used to be like 20, I think it was 22 episode season, or 26.
Yeah, you know, I think it was 22, remember. Yeah.
Yeah, 22. And it would just seem like mind-boggling that I guess a cable network can spend that much now.
Oh, yeah, it's ridiculous.
But $2.75 million, though, these guys, though, AMC are the same guys that own Mad Men.
Right.
But they don't own Mad Men. Sorry, they air Mad Men for another company.
Oh, okay, right. Yeah.
But they actually own Walking Dead, which is the puzzling part, is that they're... I don't want to say that they're giving up on it, because obviously they're not. $2.75 million is a lot of money per episode, but... boy, they have the one of the hottest properties out there.
Yeah.
And my worry is they're starting to skimp.
Well, maybe Frank Darabont's, maybe his fee alone equates to that, extra $1 million, per episode or something, right? So maybe they're doing it for that. But anyways.
Good point. Anyways, 6 million people saw that final episode of Walking Dead from last year, which is more than Mad Men is averaging, which is that is their hit. If AMC, if you're listening, please reduce the price of your popcorn and don't give up on The Walking Dead.
All right, let's keep going here.
Let's keep it going. First, we're going to talk about
Amazing Spider-Man.
Number 666.
Yes, so.
Led sales in July at 135,568 copies.
Now, of course, this was the issue that had Godzilla. No, not Godzilla. That was the Godzilla one.
It was the Godzilla issue.
It was the Godzilla issue.
Right,
but it was the Godzilla issue. This is the one where it had Spider-Man holding a copy of the Daily Bugle with the picture of the storefront on the cover, right?
Right.
Now, every store had to order 300 copies. 500 copies.
Yes.
In order to get their picture on that particular issue.
Right.
So no wonder that there's 135,000 copies sold.
Yeah. When would you say last time Spider-Man led sales charge?
Exactly. Yeah.
Maybe McFarlane era.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
I don't know when, but So a strong outing, but they kind of cheated, right?
Yeah.
If you look at average Spidey numbers, I think they're in the 60,000 to 70,000 range. So you're looking at, maybe 150 shops taking part in this.
Yeah.
Or over 100 for sure, because some guys may have ordered 1,000 or whatever.
Yeah, it's true.
But basically, the Spidey numbers have doubled because of the gimmick.
Yeah, yeah, right? Which is great for Marvel. That's what they wanted.
Great for Marvel. I don't know if it's great for the shops. Well, you're going to yell at me.
Okay.
I didn't do it.
Oh, you know what? Why wouldn't you do something like this?
I don't know.
Okay,
right.
That's not a good answer, but I'll take it.
Okay,
now.
I didn't do it because I don't know. We just, you know what it was. We didn't do it. We talked about it.
Right.
We talked about it at the shop about doing the 500 issues. But what happens is you cannot possibly sell 500 issues of it.
No, you'd have to end up giving them away.
Yeah, you'd have to end up giving them away. But we decided, okay, if we can come up with a good promo, because it's going to cost you, I think, $1,200, $1,300 out of pocket for the store.
Right.
Of which you're probably not going to get 1,000 of it back.
Right.
$1,000 is a lot of money.
Yep.
If we had a good promo that we came up with, like a good promo that we could use it for, we would have done it and used $1,000 kind of as like an advertising
right?
But all honestly, like we weren't just, our creative juices weren't flowing. We couldn't come up with like a good promo to use the book for.
And the thing is, I know that there was an ad for your store on the back cover as well.
Right.
So, but the problem I have with that is if people are already coming to your store to buy it, then they already know to go to that store. So why do you need to advertise?
Right.
Unless you, as you say, you use it as some sort of promotional event where you give them out to, I don't know, schools or something like
that.
But again, it's an expensive promotion, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So anyway, a lot of shops took part in it. I hope, I know on Comic Book Daily, I think they're going to ask some retailers that have done it. We plan on asking how they did with it.
Right.
And just kind of gauge that as how the retailer responds from it.
Okay. All right. Well, let's keep on going here. And we're going to have, speaking of Spider-Man, I've got a bit of a Spider-Man musical interlude here for you. You'll probably remember this from the old cartoon show.
Spider-Man does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, bud, he's got radioactive blood. Can he swing from a thread? Take a look overhead. Hey there, there goes the Spider-Man. In the chill of night, at the scene of a crime, like a streak of light, he arrives just in time. Spider-Man, Spider-Man, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, welcome fame, he's ignored, action is his reward. To him, life is a great big hang-up, wherever there's a hang-up. Park. You'll find the Spider-Man.
Yeah, swinging tune, Chris.
Did you like that one? Hey,
swinging.
And that was a great segue, wasn't it?
It was a great segue into...
into that song from the previous...
Oh,
yeah. Okay. You know, I'm still not too sure what segue is, I guess. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right. All right, let's move it along, Chris. It brings us to the feature of the end of this show.
Yes.
The same feature we're going to do at the end of next week's show. We're going to devote the end of the show to talk about Fan Expo Canada.
Yeah, and this is the... Now, I don't know if it's been upgraded or not. Now, it was, at one time, the third largest show in North America. Is it now the second largest?
No, I don't think... well, last year it couldn't be, because they went to the north building of the Metro Toronto Convention Center last year, which had capacity issues.
Right.
So, I definitely wasn't last year. I think New York was bigger. I'm pretty sure.
So, but still, it's the third largest comic event show of its kind in North America, and it's awesome. It really is a great show. I remember its humble beginnings, and it's become this amazingly huge
entertainment juggernaut.
You are a master of words tonight.
Yes. It's the pride of the Canadian comic book community.
Yeah,
it's the pride of gaming and anime and horror fest and all the sci-fi pavilions and expos.
Yeah,
and
it's awesome.
It is a multimedia extravaganza.
Oh wow, it really is. Now, okay, so hold on a second here. Now, for those of you who don't know what Fan Expo is, Fan Expo is a combination comic book show, science fiction convention, horror convention, and anime convention, and now gaming convention. So it's like five different shows all in one. It's not, you don't have to pay five different prices. You just pay one fee and you get into all five.
You should be in sales, Chris. I'm telling you.
Hey,
tell you. Over 200,000 square feet of shopping madness as advertised on the flyer. Shopping madness. And it's not just shopping, though, Chris. I mean, we will talk a little bit about what we're looking forward to. Now you and I will both be attending the show as guys that work at the booth, at the Big B Comics booth, and out digging stories for Comic Book Daily as well. And let me ask you.
Okay.
What are you looking forward to?
You know what? This is a show I'm always looking forward to, just the spectacle of the whole thing.
Right.
You know, we've been to so many conventions before that really seeing particular artists come and go, I don't get excited about that anymore. I don't get excited about particular dealers because I've seen so many. But this particular show is so huge that I love seeing everybody so excited, and there's an energy to the room that's amazing. Everybody's all, like, tons of people dressed up, and the people that are dressed up are all dressed up like comic book characters or anime characters or all kinds of stuff. You know, I'm planning on getting getting right in there and just having a great time.
Yeah, that's good. Me too. I love the Fan Expo. I love the spectacle of it as well.
Yeah,
it is just such an overwhelming event. You have to go in with the right frame of mind. You have to kind of drink it all in and enjoy it all.
Oh yeah.
Everywhere you turn, from the cosplayers to the dealers to the gamers, just the fans, the guys towing along their kids.
Yeah.
It's a great scene. It's
it
a
really
great place
is.
To be. There's a lot of energy in that room.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I love about it. Now, of course, every year it gets bigger and better. Now, some of the guests that they have this year for you, I mean, let's just talk a little bit about non-comic book stuff.
Right.
For non-comic book people, as far as guests go, they've got Anthony Daniels, who played C-3PO, is going to be there. Robert Englund, who played Freddy. No.
Okay,
that's not. You know, I don't know what you're talking about. No, that's Tweaky from Buck Rogers.
Okay.
But you know, thanks for coming out. Anyways, Robert Englund, who played Freddy Krueger, is going to be there. Lee Majors, who was $6 million.
Wait a minute. Back that up.
Okay. Beep beep beep.
Lee Majors, $6 million man.
He's going to be there.
That is extremely exciting.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
When I was a kid, I used to love the $6 million man.
He's no Jill Gerard, but he's okay.
He ain't no Jill Gerard, you're right.
Yeah.
But he's pretty good.
Yeah.
And I don't think he came last year. I don't remember him last year. Like his name,
Lee Majors. I don't know if he's ever been to that show.
That's exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost like a first timer.
Yep, absolutely. Right. Absolutely. Yep.
You get a virgin Lee Majors here at the show.
Virgin. Elvira's going to be there this year.
Definitely not a virgin Elvira.
Eliza.
I mean, she's been there before.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, at the con.
Oh, boy.
Oh, help me. Dig me out of this.
Elvira, if you're listening, that was all Walt that was saying that. Right. I still love you. Eliza Dushku is going to be there from Buffy and Eliza Dushku.
Eliza Dushku, right.
It's not that I didn't call you a Dushku. It's Eliza Dushku.
Hey, very exciting, too, is our old friend Kevin Sorbo.
Yes, who played Hercules.
Herc.
Right. Now, okay, so hold on. Now, I do have one question for you, and I'm not trying to mock the show in any way, but on
which
one
show, ours?
This not our show. The show we're going to go to.
Oh, the
Expo.
Show we're going to go to.
So on your flyer, they've got certain guests, but on my flyer, I've got William Shatner as being one of the guests.
Right. And
so is he a guest or is he not? Because he's not a guest on your flyer, but he is on my flyer. So I'm wondering if this is. Like,
well, it depends on when they're printed. Let's say, try to sniff the ink.
Hold on.
Mine isn't fresh. So
yeah,
I don't know.
It doesn't smell all that fresh to me either. But it's the same date. Like, it's not like I have an old flyer or anything here. So.
Well, let's assume.
All right.
Let's tell the listenership that Shatner will be there for
sure.
Oh,
boy. Oh, boy.
Bells and whistles on.
You know, I just want people to know that it was.
You can guarantee it.
Don't say things like that.
If you have a problem, call Kevin Boyd at the Fan Expo. We're not sure.
Boy.
Obviously, we hope that Lee Majors is there. But
William Shatner, we're talking about.
I'm sorry. We hope that Bill is there. And we hope that he does a poetry reading. I don't know what the hell he's doing.
Poetry reading.
But we just, I think he'll be there. I think he's going to show. That's very exciting. You know who I'm excited to see, honestly, Chris?
Okay.
Jeff Smith,
creator of Bone, is going to be there.
Creator of Bone is going to be there. I think he's going to have just tremendous lineups for him.
Oh, he will. He always does, yeah.
Kids bringing their graphic novels for him to sign and stuff like that. So I look forward to seeing Jeff Smith.
Okay, so just in that same vein, we're running out of time here, but as far as comic...
Let's try to name 400 names in 8 minutes.
As far as comic guests go, some of the bigger names that are going to be there are the Kubert brothers and their father. Ed McGuinness is going to be there. Matt Fraction is going to be there. Steve McNiven, James Robinson, Ron Garney, Brian Azzarello, Jimmy Chung, Dan Slott, Mark Brooks, Alex Maleev, Francis Manipul, Dale Eaglesham,
Stuart Eminent, Brian Azzarello,
Butch Juice, Steve Epting... or Geist, maybe his name is. I don't know how you say that. Jonathan Hickman. Lots of great people are going to be there.
Stop. Please.
Yeah. So it really,
artist overload.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And of course, those are just the big names. There's a huge artist alley there to go and check out when you go to the convention.
A lot more schmucks that you never heard of.
That is for sure. Yeah. Especially people that have just graduated from college and trying to pawn their,
their independently produced graphic.
That is probably the best way of saying that.
Right.
I was going to call it something else. That's
right. Yeah. Right. They're independently produced.
Oh, okay. So hold on.
Wait a minute. One more.
So Karen Allen is also going to be there.
Karen Allen.
Who played Marion from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Raiders of the Lost Ark. That was a great flick. Yeah. There's so much to see, Chris. What we have to do is reinforce to the listenership, people, please head out to this con. This is a con. If you live in, anywhere in southern Ontario or even western Quebec or
eastern
Michigan, northern New York, you really, really want to go to this con.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cripe, if you live in Singapore, fly over. It's worth it. Really.
It really is. It's a great show.
You know, 10 years ago, I wouldn't have said that.
No.
An international crowd. But definitely, the city of Toronto is obviously worthy just to visit on its own. But a mega event like this is... worth the price of admission.
Absolutely. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. We hope that you have enjoyed the program.
Yes, and Comic Culture is produced by Anthony Falcone and engineered by James McIntosh. For comments on the program, please visit comicbookdaily.com. Click in on the show links and add your comments in the comments field at the bottom.
And we hope to see everybody at the Fan Expo in Toronto. Go out and have yourself a wonderful day.